Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Penn State football coach James Franklin is guaranteed $38.2 million as a minimum over his new six-year contract's length that goes through 2025. How about that? College football, Penn State. No disrespect, it's a program that means a lot to
a
lot of
people.
It's
blue blood, right?
Absolutely. But not a team that's a threat to win a national championship more often than not and hasn't been in many, 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 many years.
Do you want to play a game called Should He Be Maryland's Head Coach?
It's a fun game.
It's a fun game, right?
I'm familiar with the game. I think the answer this time is yes.
Yes.
He wouldn't still be here, though.
Yeah, it wouldn't
have worked. If they would have hired him when everyone wanted. Like, Maryland is Maryland.
Yep.
And he would have coached there for a couple of years, and people would have said, this guy's really good. And then he would be probably at Penn State.
He'd have gotten off to a 6-2 start where they beat Howard and, you know, William and Mary, 1AA.
They score 100 on Howard, and then everyone talks about them as national championship
contenders. Been like 5-3, but like, look what he's doing without his own recruiting class. Then they would have been bad for a few years, and they would have moved on.
$38 million.
Yeah.
College coaching, man. It's going to get harder and harder to pry some of these guys away to come to the NFL in the years to come. Speaking of college football, Chase Young today at the NFL Combine speaking. This is the first time he's really talked publicly with a collection of reporters outside of Columbus. And as Redskins fans, you guys, I'm sure, want to hear what Chase Young had to say. Let's start with his relationship with Haskins, who he still talks with frequently. You know that Haskins, at least via social media and otherwise, has been advocating for the selection of his former college teammate with the Buckeyes, Chase Young, at number two. Here was what Young said about Haskins.
Yeah, you know, me and Dwayne, we talk all the time. I knew Dwayne since high school. You know, he definitely loves the organization, and, you know, obviously he wants me to, you know, come play with him. But and I just think, you know, we're going to see how this whole thing turns out.
Haskins, like Chase Young, people sleep on this a little bit, local, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Young played right here in D.C.'s backyard in high school as a prep star before going to Ohio State. These guys have known each other for a while. They have a good relationship. They are buddies. In fact, Chase Young's also super tight with, randomly enough, Markelle Fultz. They were boys in high school.
At DeMatha? Wow.
Yeah, so the powerhouse, basically, that is DeMatha's athletic program, those guys spread their wings and go all over the country. But there is a real fraternity there. Now, I always think of, like, collegiately, you hear all the players from the U that always hang out. And at DeMatha, it seems like those guys, as they go on and they have great success years from their high school time, professionally in all the various sports, there is a true, like, pride that they take in coming back home, being from the DeMatha program. But Chase Young says he and Haskins talk pretty regularly. Not surprising to me. Obviously, they bring in Terry McLaurin. You saw K.J. Hill, the wide receiver from Ohio State, say something similar, where the Redskins went on a little kick for a couple of years where if you went to Alabama, you were running that locker room because a bunch of your buddies were there and you're probably coming to Washington soon enough. Maybe Ohio State is next.
That's the new thing. Again, you could mine from worse programs, certainly, right? If you're looking at some of the talent that they consistently churn out.
Nothing wrong with that.
Every year, do you have a top five guy in the pass rushing game? Check that, Mark. Do you have a wide receiver that kicks people's butt? Yep, check that. I mean, players. That's where the players are.
Michael Thomas, man.
Uh-huh.
They've had some great young players turn into NFL stars quickly out of Ohio State. Chase Young was asked about where he'd rank himself in the draft class and kind of his feelings about himself as a prospect. I would say that he likes his game plenty.
I definitely think I'm the best player in the draft. I think I showed it on my tape. You can go to every game. I think I showed it, I definitely think I put my best foot forward this year. I grinded hard. Two of my biggest things are hard work and dedication, and I'm going to bring those two to the NFL with me.
I love the idea of just go watch my tape. When you had a good enough season and you feel confident enough in how hard you worked on every play, that you weren't taking drives off, that even in the games where you didn't have sacks, so to speak, if people go watch you, they'll see the disruptiveness and how much you changed the trench battle because of double teams and chips and other players making plays. When you can just rely on your film, it speaks to the year that you had and really how quality a player you are. And he basically pulled that. It's just a great trump card. He goes, just watch my film. I'm the best player in this class. 21 TFLs, 16 and a half sacks, 7 forced fumbles, and getting double teamed and chipped most of the way to those numbers. Go watch my tape. I love that. He thinks he's the best player in the entire class.
That's what I want. I want that. I want the braggadocious, self-confidence to match the production, right? That's the exciting thing. That's why this prospect is so tantalizing. You can't find anybody that says a bad word about Chase Young. It's the, well, he's not transcendent great. He's just the best player in this class.
This is a crapshoot. It's even got nothing to do with him.
Right.
There are other guys who were this good, supposedly. And you'll reference LeVar Arrington because of injuries or not having the career he was supposed to, or Jadeveon Clowney or what have you. It really has nothing to do with Chase Young. It's just the idea that other guys who everybody loved in the top three were busts, which really isn't any more relevant than saying, well, Tom Brady was drafted in the sixth round, so
therefore,
draft your quarterbacks
draft quarterback
in the sixth round.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing, honestly, in the other direction. Now, dominating the way that he did at Ohio State, when he was playing against some blue blood offensive lines with great NFL prospects, is impressive. But there are also games on your schedule where you're getting a sack and a half against Florida Atlantic or 2.5 sacks against Indiana. And when you had 2 sacks and you had 2 TFLs and a monster game against the Miami of Ohio, that is not the NFL. But Chase Young is not really concerned about the leap up in competition. He says he's ready to go.
Oh, it's going to be exciting. I'm definitely excited, to play with the big dogs, man, and excited to show the world what I can do.
You're going to have to elevate your game. If Chase Young is the same guy next year and the year after that he was at Ohio State, then obviously he's just okay in the NFL. By the way, that level of player, it's not bad.
No.
But for him to justify the pick to be Nick Bosa, to make everyone around him better, to turn a bad defense into a good defense, a mediocre pass rushing group into an upper echelon one right away, he's going to have to just get better. And with coaching and investing full time in your game and yourself and your ability to work out and eat correctly, theoretically that will happen. But he's got to know that the level of competition compared to some of his bigger games against lesser players, that's a thing of the past.
Yeah, there's no Illinois left tackle on Sundays. You know what I mean? There's no easy get-right game where you can eat 2, 3, 4 sacks to help boo your total. And he was consistent every week, which is what makes him, again, such a special-looking prospect.
He will not be taking part in combine drills. There's no reason for him to. And I had no issue with that because you can't help yourself.
So I was watching the NFL Network yesterday in the old gymnasium downstairs. It was ESPN. I apologize. And somebody was saying, think about what Deion Sanders did. It was like 25 years ago when he had nothing to prove and he showed up and ran super fast and was awesome. That's cool. That's really great. I couldn't believe they were sitting there arguing about the idea that he should be doing stuff.
Oh, somebody was taking issue with
him? Yeah, somebody's saying, think about some of the great guys that have showed up and wowed people. That's all cool and everything, but this isn't like a feel-good movie where, Samuel Jackson's the coach and the team from the small town is going to overcome the bad guys. This is your life. Multi-million dollars are on the line. There is no reason to risk anything when the only thing you can do is either prove people correct what they already know or lower your own stock.
Yeah,
there's no upside to it.
That's Manute Bull level reach there.
What?
I mean, you're stretching Armstrong style bad on that. To me, what is the best case scenario? He has an incredible workout and everyone goes, man, he's the best defensive player in this class.
That thing we already thought is true.
He's probably going second overall. Could he do anything for the Bengals to take him at 1 over Joe Burrow? No. Probably not.
Unless he starts dropping back and throwing passes and hitting out routes on time.
Exactly.
Then no.
What is the point of him to work out? But I loved his answer when he was asked this morning. This was at his gathering with the media. Why isn't he doing combine drills?
I chose me and my team. We decided that because, you know, that first day, you know, camp, when I step on the field, I want to be the best player I can be. I don't want to waste time, you know, trying to be a combine athlete.
I don't want to waste time trying to be a combine athlete. That is what every player should say from now on when they skip combine activities. Because it's tough to argue with that.
Yeah, Mike Mamula says hello.
I just want to be an awesome football player. Don't need all the other stuff.
That's
your thoughts on anything
right
you just heard from Chase Young, 800-636-1067. We can get to that. Plus, it has begun. The Astros are getting booed heartily, and in addition to loud boos, they're getting hit by pitches in spring training.
Oh, what a bunch of victims.
You're listening to The Fan.
Guys, Danny Rubio here from my pals at Tedbert Ford. I'm a Tedbert guy. I can prove it. Three different times, the Hooray family has set out on a journey to go see my guys at Tedbert Ford. And three different times, I have returned home with a new vehicle from Tedbert Ford. I got my Fusion parked downstairs right meow. She's charging up. I got about three quarters of a gas tank in that Fusion. I've had three quarters of a gas tank in that Fusion for about 14 weeks, 15 weeks. I filled up around kind of the new year and haven't had to since because it's charging up downstairs. I love that. You'll love the deals you get at Tedbert Ford. Right meow, some pretty awesome ones. How about $15,500 off the MSRP on a 2019 F-150 truck from your F-150 headquarters? It's Tedbert Ford, by the way. 2024 Explorer, how about $10,000 below the MSRP on a 2020 Ford Explorer? It's not some overstock situation on the 2019s. It's a 2020 Ford Explorer, 10 grand below the MSRP on that bad Jackson. The best buying experience in D.C. I'm telling you, I've been three different times, so I know what I'm talking about. Go see my pals, as I said, in Fairfax, Chantilly. Click away at TedBritt.com. When you go, tell them.
At 11:45, we've got a double play coming your way. Noon, we're going blitzing around the Beltway. You know what I'd like to discuss on the double play?
What's that?
We have not done anything on the coronavirus on this show.
Mm.
We were both kind of in lockstep at level not worry at all at one point. I just want to take your temperature with all the developments of
no
the last 24
intended.
Hours.
I have a quick thing I've got to do, a passing, but a wonderful life led and a legacy for, I'm not kidding you, millions of people. This guy made millions of people happy.
All right.
I want to share that.
It's coming up in our double play today on Grant and Danny ahead of our noon Beltway Blitz, which is 40 minutes away. 12 o'clock today, the latest on these skins from the Combine. The Caps, as they get ready to play Winnipeg tonight, and the Wizards, after a much-needed win over Brooklyn, Bradley Beal pouring in 30 more points after his consecutive 50-point performances. In case you're curious, I'm going with a button-down dress shirt tucked
into what's going on today?
Gray slacks with some black dressy kicks.
Tell me about the slacks.
The what slack about channel. Them?
What, they look like suit pants to me. Are they...
No, I think
they're
just like gray dress pants.
Gray dress pants, but like, that could be like a suit pant.
They didn't come as a suit. It's like more of a
slack. It's a suit
pants.
Separate. Yeah. I mean, they look very sharp. And where's your shirt from? Am I asking?
This I have no idea.
Can
You'd
I look,
have to look,
I look at the collar?
Tag.
Can you bring it over me? I'm going to bring Grant closer
this
to me.
This is a
here.
Long time.
This is an Easy Care cotton. I don't see a tag on that bad boy. Oh, let me get down there. Nope, it says Easy Care. It's an Easy Care Oxford. I don't know where it's from, though.
I'm not familiar.
It's sharp. So the Oxford, and I was talking to Javi about this the other day, he wants to improve his dress-up game as...
Why does he want to do that?
Well, he's a senior executive here at Entercom. I mean,
he's not just
the producer of the Junkies, where it's beanie time and doing cameos. He's got to be in very important meetings where decisions are made that affect the lives of hundreds of people, multi-million dollars on the line. So he wanted to improve his dress shirt game. And we were explaining the difference between Oxfords, Poplins, and Twills. And he was just... He listened to me talk for longer than he's ever listened to our show.
Well, that would mean he listened to you talk for a few seconds.
For almost a minute, he listened.
That's good.
Almost a minute.
Yeah, he does not listen to the show, which is fine. By the
way,
there's nothing you enjoy more than when someone comes into the studio and asks you a question that you get to then educate them on, whatever that is. So it could be AWOD with a video game, or someone will ask you about
Game of Thrones,
eating fewer
the
carbs,
outsider,
or
yes.
Whatever it is.
You have just stumbled on to the essential thing that is me. It's obnoxious, and not that many people like it, but the people that do are in. What you just described is my favorite thing in the entire world. To be the person that knows the thing and then have people ask me about the thing and I get to tell you that I know about the thing. It's the book. It's the show. It's the video game. It's the dress shirt. It's what I want to do. It's what I want to do in my life. I want to be the guy that knows the thing. Yes, I read the book, and yes, I know the difference between that and the show. I want everyone to know that I know. It's so obnoxious. And again, I'm not that popular.
You're a little bit popular.
No.
By the way, XFL Tolerable. Commissioner Oliver Luck will speak to the NFL Players Association agents at their meeting today at 2 p.m.
This is going to sound rude and dismissive and mean. Why? What's he talking
Don't
to
know.
Them about?
No idea. XFL Commissioner Oliver Luck is speaking at the Players Association agents meeting at 2 p.m. today. I would imagine that the vast majority of the players in the XFL are represented by those agents.
That makes sense.
So I would think that it's an opportunity for him to go get in front of most of those agents who represent the players that make up his league.
And maybe talk about his plan or where they are. Maybe kind of state
Possibly,
of the union.
Yeah, how the 3 weeks have gone, where we're going from here, what's next. But you think, I mean, most of the guys in that league are represented by an agent.
Yeah, and they're kind
of... Most of those agents either have their tentacles in the NFL or already represent NFL players.
So this is going to be a poorly drawn analogy, so bear with your pal, okay? Imagine the NFL is a big, giant fortress, an impregnable fortress, right, where nothing can be assailed, the empire is beautiful, it's Rome in its prime. I see the XFL right now, like, they're kind of outside. They're like, you guys, hey, you guys, look, we got some cool shows over here. You know, we could bring this to the Coliseum. You guys, what shows in the Coliseum? It's pretty neat. Hey, you guys. And like slowly someone's looking at the binoculars at like a parapet. They're like, hey, that looks like an XFL. That looks pretty cool. That's interesting. And it's starting to go up the ladder a little bit. There's a lot of hovering around of the XFL near the NFL, right? We discussed like a potential partnership and what that would mean. I think that's kind of the understated goal here.
Are you following the Astros spring training scene at all?
Yes, I am.
So
with
yesterday,
so much glee.
Let me get the audio, Thommy, from SNY, please, on George Springer getting booed as he came to the plate. When they play road spring training games, I say air quotes here on road.
Sure.
Because it's all kind of Florida and it's whatever.
25 miles from each other, yeah.
There are 6,000 or 7,000 people at some of these games, sometimes fewer, that are very, very loud and letting the Astros know that they don't like them. This was on SNY yesterday as they played the Mets spring training team.
The affable George Springer. And he tried to hit the ball 17,000 miles in response to the boos.
I think what was amazing about that, watching it, when you see the clip, I've never seen a guy swing harder than he swung.
Nobody ever has swung harder.
But this is something David Ortiz talked about, shtick aside, where he said the hardest thing for the Astros this year is not going to be not knowing what pitches are coming. It's going to be the mental game that they're going to have to win, and the mental propensity to overcome the hatred and the boos and not basically try to do too much. And what happened there? He comes up. He's got to step out for a second. It's really, really loud at the spring training ballpark. And then he tried to hit a ball six cities over, and he swung and missed.
It was fun.
Springer actually talked about this afterwards. Here's what he had to say about being booed so badly.
Jeers and boos out there. Some of you guys were announced going up to the plate. What is your plan personally for the year, and expecting or anticipating any of that?
I'm focused on the pitcher. You know, I know who I have to face. You know, any of the outside stuff, you just kind of have to just kind of attempt to, you know, block it out or hope. But, you know, at that point in time, it's, you know, whatever's on the field, and you play.
Were you focused on the pitcher when you dropped down to a knee swinging and missing?
I think you were probably
trying to shut that crowd up a little bit.
When an animal is in the wild and it thinks it hears a predator, there's a little thing that happens with its ears. They prick up and they sort of do that scan. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm familiar.
His ears were up right there. The old rabbit ears were up. You didn't think you didn't hear those? This is going to happen, and I think it's delightful. The mob justice, baby. No one go on the field. Nobody do anything crazy. Boo them. Boo them every time they get off a bus, every time they're headed to the airport. You see someone with an Astros thing on, just boo them in public. Public boos like the Seinfeld episode when he went to her office and booed her. Boo!
There's no way you can watch that swing which was not a normal swing,
it was not.
And say that he was not trying to send a message back. And the more the Astros do that this year, the worse off they'll be.
I love it.
They got to find a way to channel whatever was going through his mind and just kind of Jim Zorn style, stay medium.
You know it's
going
to go. It's an us against the world thing, and then they'll win 110 games, and it's going to be so annoying.
Brandon Scherff could get the franchise tag. He might not be going anywhere, even if the Redskins don't lock him up. That would mean paying him a lot of money. What do we think about Scherff and the franchise tag next on Grant and Danny? The Caps play in Winnipeg tonight. Carl Hagelin will be on the show to preview that game and to discuss all of the busy goings-on for the Caps in the last week, including two trades, a terrible loss in New Jersey, an unbelievable win against Pittsburgh, and back-to-back W's to get control of the Metro Division again. Make sure you're listening for Hags coming up at 12:45. Ahead of our double play, 10 minutes out, though, Brandon Scherff could be getting the franchise tag, Danny. You and I have talked quite a bit about his future and whether or not it is time to re-sign Brandon Scherff. He's had injuries the last couple of seasons, and because of that, it does seem like he is the perfect candidate for a franchise tag. Now, that means you get paid top five money at your position. If you look at the highest paid offensive guards in the NFL, that position has exploded in terms of value the last couple of years.
Via John Keim, his Twitter account, he said, and this is a projection via Over the Cap, so I guess it's via John Keim and Over the Cap, $16.1 million for a right guard. One-year deal. That's the franchise tag at right guard. So remember we were sitting there going, you know who's in a great spot? The Redskins. Look at all their salary cap space. Look at this. Look at that. That eats up a giant chunk of that projected cap space and limits your shopping.
Top five money available, which is a really good place to be. You give him $16 million, and then you give, you know, if it's Austin Hooper, say $11 million, there goes $27 million of your available
space. You re-sign Trent Williams. Next thing you know, you don't have that much.
But you've got a left tackle who could make a Pro Bowl, a right guard who could make a Pro Bowl, and a tight end who could make a Pro Bowl. That's what happens when you sign three really good football players.
Yeah.
The question on Scherff, though, is he worthy after the last couple seasons of doing that? Look, I'm a proponent of keeping him around. I am proposing that they do that. If he walks, I'm not going to lose sleep just because it's the guard position. But he has not played 16 games since 2016. He missed two games in 2017, half the year in 2018, and five more games in 2019. So he's now become a guy, even at 28 years old in his prime, where you're probably going to get somewhere between 12 to 14 games out of him, and you worry a little bit about getting banged up on the interior, plugging someone else from time to time. $16 million for the guard spot is just a lot for me, and honestly,
it's a lot.
That number seems too high, because the highest paid guard in the league, to my knowledge, right now at $14 million a year is Brooks. Zach Martin makes 14. Andrew Norwell makes 13.3. Now, maybe that's not accounting for all their raises.
And I wonder if it's an offensive lineman thing instead of like a guard specific.
That could be. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it accounts for the tackle position.
Because that jumped out at me as well, and I'm going, 16-1, that would obviously be the highest paid guard in the league, especially on an AAV basis.
Maybe that's what it is. It's O-line specific.
Maybe it's O-line specific.
But I was all for putting the franchise tag on him. If it was around $12 million bucks, I thought that was a no-brainer. You're adding another 25% of that salary on top of it. That's a little bit tougher to do. Yes or no, are you franchise tagging Brandon Scherff for $16 million?
I'm really looking to get a deal done here instead of franchising.
I don't think they're going to be able to.
It sounds like they're not. And it sounds like, again, per John Keim, around AAV of $14 million if he's on the open market. Again, that's one of those. You're not necessarily resetting the guard market, but you're taking advantage of some recent precedent here for that.
I'm with you, by the way. I would rather sign him to a long-term deal at $14 per than rent him on 1 year for $16. I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I probably would not franchise him at $16
million. I'm not doing that.
And the only reason I say that is because of how far away they are. You franchise him this year, there's no guarantee that you're willing to pay him next year. And then that negotiation is probably no longer 14. One or two guards get paid between now and then. Mm-hmm. Maybe that number goes up. What if he stays healthy? He plays 16 games and he's back in the Pro Bowl again. That number goes up. So if this was a quarterback, of course you franchise him. If this was a wide receiver, I think no doubt you franchise him. I'm not saying guard is the least important position in football, but I don't have the same respect and reverence for it. I think it's easier to get by. Look at what happened with Ereck Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was run out of New York on a stake, and they basically said he was going to be out of the league within months. And he was a very serviceable to, at times, solid guard for the Redskins. If it's a tackle, I'm franchising him. He's not that. He's a guard. I will not do that.
I'm going to use a hack phrase, and I hate this, but I don't have another way to describe it. I think there are certain positions in all of sports that are difference makers, right? I don't think you can be a difference maker as a guard. The greatest guard that ever lived, pick it, whoever it is. I can't name 10. I don't know 10 Hall of Fame guards. I don't know 5. I'm not even sure I know even a couple off the top of my head. I could look it up and remember, oh, yeah, that guy was really good, right? And Hutchinson is the most recent guy that got paid a whole bunch of money, right? Or was he a center? You see my point. I don't think you can be a difference maker at guard.
Gene Upshaw was a guard. Bruce Matthews was a guard. I'm looking up the best
ever.
Yeah,
there you go. These are
Larry Allen from the Cowboys comes to mind.
That's another good one. But you see my point here. I think you can be a difference maker as a defensive end, even as a D-tackle, wreaking havoc and breaking through. You can be a difference maker at linebacker, as corner, as a safety, as a wide receiver. As a quarterback, I just don't think you can be a difference maker, quote unquote, as a guard. I'm sure some NFL offensive coordinator would laugh at me and make fun of me and tell me, of course you can be. Look at him on this screen pass where he's 30 yards down the field, thumping some safety skull on a 60-yard gain. But to me, down in and down out, as long as you're above a minimum threshold of acceptability at guard, you're fine. I would very, very rarely allocate resources in a capped spending league like the NFL on a guard. I'm paying my quarterback. I'm paying one playmaker on offense and a couple playmakers on defense, and that's who gets paid for
it. I'd have no problem paying elite guards, which Brandon Scherff is one of them. I believe that. If the number hadn't gotten this high. Now, this is, to me, the amount of money reserved for spending on a great wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
DBs don't make this much.
Right.
Maybe the best corners in the league will be in the next couple of seasons, but really? I mean, we're now just kind of blending guard money with tackle money. Tackles out on an island dealing with the best pass rushers in the game. I'm not willing to do that. But what about you guys? Would you pay Brandon Scherff if it took over $15 million a year on the franchise tag? 800-636-1067 is the number. Our double play is next. Danny's got somebody he wants to honor. I want to talk about the coronavirus coming to America and whether or not we should be concerned at all. There are people that are trying to petrify me. I'm not listening to them mostly, but we should get into that. I want to take your temperature next. G&D on the Fan. Each and every day at 11:45, our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Jeeps, you might be too young, but what do you think of when I say up, up, down, down, left, right, BA start?
It's definitely a video game thing that people used to do as like a code. I'm going to guess like Mortal Kombat, but I have no idea.
The Konami code.
Okay.
And this was invented by a gentleman who passed recently named Kazuhisa Hashimoto. Rest in peace, Hashimoto-san. 79 years old. He was a programmer and producer for Konami. And he was playing some of these games and testing. And, he was obviously a very accomplished person in the video game industry already. Old school Nintendo type stuff. And he kind of said to himself, I wish there would be a little way to make these games easier for every player. You don't have to do this, but if you knew a little code, you could put it in and you could get something special, or you could get an extra weapon, or you could have it be slightly easier without totally disrupting the game. So the first game to contain this via Konami was a side-scrolling sort of plane-style shooter called Gradius. And it would go on to be in dozens and dozens of games over the years. It became most famous with Contra, where if you put in the Konami code and you could get yourself 30 lives, if you could beat it with 3 lives, you were ridiculous. Most people had to do 30 lives in order to beat it. It became kind of a standard industry thing. So he was somebody that was concerned with making games accessible, making games fun, making games kind of an insider deal for folks that, kind of chose. And it was almost this, cool little behind-the-scenes look into the way these things were kind of produced. They're always so many games that were just too hard, that were just too complicated, that were too much. And so you could use the Konami code. And he made a lot of people happy, increased the enjoyment of millions of people worldwide who have played games like me since they were little kids. So rest in peace, Hashimoto-san.
No good transition from that. But I wanted to talk, Danny, about the coronavirus with you.
Mm-hmm.
We have not at any point brought this up on the show.
No, we haven't.
It's not something, honestly, that I've even thought much about over the last several days, other than when CK, our program director, who is desperately trying to get me to be worried about it and trying to act like it's the biggest deal in the world. Like, every time there's another case anywhere, he, like, sends me the story, links me to it, and texts me.
He's a doomsday prepper. He's desperate for everyone to panic.
This all started, it's not like we normally talk about these things, but it all started because he was telling me how he'd gone out and he'd, like, stocked up on water and a couple things. He was preparing. This was weeks ago, by the way, for the inevitable, which was no one's going to be able to leave their house or go to work, or everyone's going to be sick, or whatever he thinks is going to happen. So I was dismissive initially. I didn't say, this is never coming to America. I didn't, with Eddie, the great Eddie, I didn't say that this is something that's never going to affect anyone that we know. My point is, I'm not going to worry about this right now because there are a couple of cases in places that I've ever been in my life, and most of this is going on in China. That was kind of my take. So you fast forward, yesterday the president actually addressed the United States on this. You've had the CDC come out and talk about this, as well as the WHO, the World Health Organization. And it sounds like we are now preparing for the United States of America to deal with their outbreak of the coronavirus. I think there's pretty much two camps on this. There are people like Eric Bickle, as I heard this morning, who are very scared that the end is nigh, essentially, that this is going to become a pandemic and it's massive and it's going to be sweeping. And then there are people like me up until now where I have said things like, listen, from what I can gather, it doesn't kill most of the people that have it. If the average person gets it, they get sick for a week or so, and then they're fine afterwards. And we're probably not going to have to deal with it as much here as they are in other places. It's kind of what I've gathered. But I will admit this publicly. I am getting more nervous, albeit not petrified, than I was initially when I just kind of was completely dismissive of it. Japan has closed down all of their schools. Mm-hmm. Nobody in Japan is going to school right now. They also don't allow for sporting events to have crowds right now. All of their games are being played in front of no crowds because they are so petrified of this. The numbers as of last night at 10 p.m., and these have obviously changed some since, there were 78,000 cases in China of coronavirus confirmed, 1,500 in South Korea, 705 in Diamond Princess, the ship that was
right.
Obviously like stricken with this, and there were plenty of Americans on there we had to get off and quarantine. Italy has 450 and a huge outbreak taking place. Japan, only 189 as of 10 p.m. last night, but I guess they were worried about what is to come. The U.S. had 60 confirmed cases as of last night, and I believe only 2 deaths. And with all due respect to the deaths, 2 people are dying, sadly enough, while I'm talking right now in car accidents somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I cannot lose sleep over 2 people dying of a virus. But I say all this to ask you, Danny, what is your level of concern 1 month ago about this, 1 out of 100, and what is your level of concern today, 1 out of 100?
1 then, 1 now. Because here's
you're still a 1 out of 100.
Here's the prognosis. Here's what you're supposed to do. Wash your hands. Don't be disgusting. That's the advice that's given, and it's the same protocol.
But it's airborne. I mean, you can wash your hands 1,000 times and still get it.
Of course it is. The thing you're supposed to do is clean surfaces that you use a lot, wash your hands, do normal things that you would do to avoid the flu, to avoid any sort of respiratory infection. This is just another name for the flu. That's all it is. Just a different strain. Same as the bird flu, same as mad cow, same as all these other things that we're supposed to be heavily concerned about.
But we weren't threatening to not have Olympics like they are in Japan over those, and we weren't shutting down entire public school systems in countries.
Sure. And we shouldn't be now. You're supposed to just do good public health things. And the problem is you can't count on people to do good public health things, so the disease ends up spreading. And it causes a panic. You also have the extra factor of the incredibly tight-lipped Chinese government, authoritarian style, not allowing any information to leak out, which leads to further panic. Here's what people should be doing. Not panicking. Wash your hands. Don't pick your nose. Don't lick things after other people. Just do normal, good hygiene things that you're supposed to do all the time.
So is your point that we can't help it if we get it, don't worry about it? Or is your point that this is like an overblown media concoction? Or both?
Both. The prescription for people to avoid it.
Because the experts weighing in now are saying this is a thing.
Yeah, of course it's a thing. It's a communicable disease that's going to run its course. It's absolutely happening. And the panic over it is unfounded. There's no special secret sauce. Wash your hands. It's a normal, basic life function.
I was a 1 before, I would say the last few weeks, I'm now probably a 3. Like, I think about it a few times a day. I didn't used to, but that's as far as I'll go. I'm not panicked or worried. I'm not sending out messages like CK's every time there's a new case.
The only people that should be concerned are people like us, little kids. That's the only population that should care.
Grant and Danny on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.